Hello, welcome to Whispering Ned's prompt number 137. And I'm not at Comfy Studios today. I am back at the shed. It's just us. Anyway, let's get serious. So I've been meaning to do this one for a bit. I'm a big fan of C.L.R. James. He's a West Indian writer, journalist, historian, and a tireless political activist. And in my opinion, one of the most important figures of the 20th century. He had a lot to do with West Indies liberation. You know, he campaigned a lot for years for the independence. He had a huge influence on the West Indies breaking away from British rule, which is always a good thing, as our American friends could testify. He was what Thomas Paine was to the American Revolution. Maybe, you know, it's a fair enough analogy. He lived for various spells throughout his life in Britain, writing, teaching, doing his activist stuff. And in America, he taught at Columbia University. But in 1953, he was forced to leave the US under threat of deportation because he overstayed his visa. And in his attempt to remain in America, he wrote a study of Herman Melville, Mariners, Renegades and Castaways, the story of Herman Melville and the world we live in. He sent a copy to every member of the Senate, and he wrote it while being detained on Ellis Island. And in an impassioned letter to his old friend, George Padmore, James said that in Mariners he was using Moby Dick as a parable for the anti-socialism sweeping the United States, a consequence, he thought, of an uncritical faith in capitalism. Who knows? We have yet to see. But that's not the book that I'm going to quote, because my favourite book by him is Beyond a Boundary, which was published in 1963. And there are loads of passages in this book that I would like to read. But I've picked this one because I just think it would be more suitable for a prompt, and it's more scope, suits Ned's better. But some of the writing on the history of the West Indies and how cricket relates to that is really good. But I'll read this bit from page 78. There are the people who, having enjoyed the profits and privileges of racialism for most of a lifetime, now that racialism is under fire and in retreat, profess a lofty scorn for it and are terribly pained when you so much as refer to it in any shape or form. Their means have changed, not their ends, which are the same as they always were, to exploit racialism for their own comfort and convenience. They are a dying race, and they will not be missed. They are a source of discomfort to their children and embarrassment to their grandchildren. There is a less obvious fraternity. They not only understand, but sympathise. When you delve into your own history, they see in it a search for catharsis. You are getting the poison out of your system. Unsubtle self-adulation. Here, Mr. T.S. Eliot will help. In addition to what all poetry gives, he is of special value to me, in that in him I find more often than elsewhere, and beautifully and precisely stated, things to which I am completely opposed. In Little Gidding, he says, "This is the use of memory for liberation, not less of love, but expanding of love beyond desire, and so liberation from the future as well as the past. That is exactly what I do not think about these memories. They do not liberate me in any sense, except that once you have written down something, your mind is ready to go further. I do not want to be liberated from them. I would consider liberation from them a grievous loss, irreparable. I am not recording tragedy. I do not wish to be liberated from the past, and, above all, I do not wish to be liberated from its future, not me. Most of this book had already been written when it so happened that I revisited the West Indies after 26 years' absence and stayed there for over 4 years. Greedily I relived the past, every inch of it that I could find. I took part in the present, particularly a grand and glorious and victorious campaign to make a black man, Frank Worrell, captain of the West Indies tour to Australia. And I speculated and planned and schemed for the future, among other plans. How to lay racialism flat and keep stamping on it whenever it raises its head, and at the same time not to lose a sense of proportion. Not at all easy. I do not deny that there are memories that I may wish to be liberated from. The conscience impotence of rage at human folly, and the laceration of laughter at what ceases to amuse. At last, the rending pain of reenactment of all that you have done and been, the shame of motives late revealed, and the awareness of things ill done and done to others' harm, which once you took for exercise of virtue. Eliot again. Somewhat too much of anguish and anxiety and the other bathing beaches of contemporary philosophy, wash and be dirty. Yet there were such, and precisely because of the self-imposed limits of this book, it would be a mistake not to remind occasionally of the spaces and depths it does not touch. But there are no retrospective agonies around the yellow sticks and the green grass and the shining sun, the heaving soil and passion, which in the end did so little harm to anyone. Racialists, au revoir. We shall meet again. Anyway, I love that. And it reminds me, I did Vitae Lampada, which is a Henry Newbolt poem, I think, which is an old favourite, not long ago. And our friend Philip said he didn't like that poem, and his response was a retort. His contribution to Ned's was a retort to Vitae Lampada. And I thought that was great. I really enjoyed that. And I suppose a little bit of credit for picking that passage. It touches on a similar type of thing. So it reminded me of that. So anyway, I'm rambling. I better go. This is the sixth take of this. You do realise the other ones, they were so much better. Ah, if only you'd have heard it. Anyway, lots of love. Have a good week. Thanks for the Crest poems. I'll catch you soon. Mwah.